Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent, documentary, and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Jaded police detective Travis arrives in a remote Australian outback town of Limbo to investigate a cold case murder of a local indigenous girl from 20 years ago. As truths about the crime begin to unfold, Travis gains new insight into the unsolved case from the victim's fractured family, their surviving witnesses, and the reclusive brother of the chief suspect. Just a beautiful film to look at and a wonderful story that rewards you for paying attention. The film is called Limbo, and we're joined today by the director, producer, writer, cinematographer, editor, and composer, Ivan Sen. Ivan, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. This is a very compelling film, and the way that you shoot it, the way that you bring the story along is so compelling. What is it that inspired you to make Limbo?
So the story is very much a reflection of my own family's experience with the justice system in Australia. Being an Indigenous person, my family have had a long history with, I guess, the justice system. Growing up in a rural area in Australia, where police become involved in your life from a very early age. Which is basically a result of the past of this country, really, since colonization, where colonization has resulted in the police force and in Indigenous people in conflict. And I guess the echoes of that are still around in Australia, as it is in many other countries as well. So this personal reflection is also combined with the incredible landscape which the film is set. And that landscape has its own stories as well. It's an incredibly visual place, but it also has a lot of scars. It's a very damaged landscape, and the characters that I created from that landscape are also quite damaged. And so the combination of this incredible landscape and my own personal history is, what's resulted in the story.
Did you mention the Cooper Petty? Am I saying that right? Cooper Petty,
Cooper Petty, yeah.
That the area, is that what we're talking about in Australia?
Yeah, in South Australia. It's kind of the center of South Australia, which is, it's all desert country. It's still got a very strong Indigenous presence there. There's several tribal groups that intersect there. And it also has its own kind of stories as well, which are very similar to the story of Limbo, and which is quite coincidental, in fact. It's difficult to go anywhere in Australia without coming across stories where Indigenous families being the victims of crime and having a very poor response by the local law enforcement.
The landscape, as you mentioned, the earth's, it looks like pockmarks. It looks like it's damaged. The damage that we see is mostly from mining. Is that all mining? Is that what that is?
Yeah, there's over 2 million mine shafts there. And it's from opal mining, which really kind of took off in the 60s, really. But the good days are kind of over, like you have when you have a mining town, and you have a lot of kind of people still trying to hang on there, and they've made it their home. And it's a place, because of all of the holes in the ground, it's a place where you can actually hide bodies and hide secrets.
Well, I want to talk about the characters in the film. Obviously, Travis Hurley, who is played by Simon Baker, coming Charlie, who's one of the Indigenous people who is part of the story, Emma, Joseph. These are very well-crafted characters. I thought what you did with them, there's a little bit of an iconography to all of them, but they're also very well, they're three-dimensional characters. Where did Travis Hurley come from? How did you develop him as a character?
Well, in the past, I've made films about an Indigenous detective who's kind of caught between the black world and the white world as he tries to go about his job and, I guess, try and make things better for his people. But Limbo, I really wanted to look at that intersection between the white justice system and Indigenous families in Australia. Limbo was a chance to do that. But the characters are all in their own personal limbo. I mean, the Indigenous family through Emma and Charlie, they're the siblings of the missing child who went missing 20 years earlier. They're stuck in this limbo since that crime, and the lackluster police response at the time didn't help. And so you have this damaged cop who comes in and attempts to with these damaged Indigenous people. And so I think it's like a three-way interaction where there's this kind of this want to move forward, but there's also, you know, all of these ghosts of the past which are kind of keeping them apart.
Well, and with Travis, he is, I don't know if the right word is disengaged. He's there because he has to be. And for much of the film, he seems to have mostly a passing interest in making any progress in this. Although over the course of the film, he does develop a degree of relationships with the other characters to the point where it moves the needle somewhat in terms of his character, but he is damaged. As you said, he's in limbo as well for a host of reasons, including his own problems with drugs and he's a damaged man in this film, and his character is. This is such a tough thing to do with a character like him, is for you to present him the way that he is in the film, but on some level he manages to bring us to care about the story, about the fate of Charlotte. In subtle ways. There's so much about this film that is understated and subtle. And as I said at the beginning, this is a film that you're rewarded by paying attention. You're rewarded by leaning forward a little bit in a way to really bring the story and the power of the story. As understated as it may feel like, this is a very powerful story for me. And in that way. So does that sound appropriate?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the terms subtlety and truth are almost, you know, you can almost exchange them for each other sometimes, because from the beginning, I wanted to create a story that wasn't contrived and was truthful to reality. And it's not the police story where it's, you know, the cop comes in and solves everything. I mean, I wanted to present this in a very realistic way and from perspective of the Indigenous family, as well as from Travis, and comes with that truthfulness is subtlety, you know. And when a cop comes into a town 20 years after a botched case, it's going to be very difficult to get traction. And that's what happens. It's very difficult, especially when you're an apathetic cop and you're dealing with, I guess, you know, in another way, apathetic people who are the family of the victim. And so it's not going to be easy. And so I was really interested in the intricacies and the intimate subtlety around that. And I think it speaks in a broader way about the position of Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australia and the subtleties between the two groups as we try to find, I guess, a future together.
Before I get into the other characters of Charlie, Emma, and Joseph, as I just mentioned, in the performances on the part of the actors, just want to remind our listeners we're speaking with Ivan Sen. He is the director, producer, writer, cinematographer, editor, and composer of this wonderful film called Limbo. It's coming out on March 22nd here in Los Angeles, so what should I be looking for this? The performances by Rob Collins, Natasha Wingany, as well as Nicholas Hope, are the supporting characters, if you will, in this story, but they're important. I shouldn't even say they're supporting. They're very important to the story and how it unfolds. And I thought all of their performances are nuanced and managed to establish a character and a dynamic that it is what we're talking about, this distance between the Indigenous people and everyone else. And I just thought they were terrific performances all the way around. I thought Rob Collins was wonderful. Everybody casting this again, sort of what were you looking for with the these particular performances here?
I generally write for certain actors, and I wrote the character of Charlie for Rob Collins, and so I think there's a strong fit there because he was aware of the script early on, and so we got to talk about it a lot. What we kept coming back to was a subtlety that we were looking for, an attention to detail, and then Natasha Wanganeen, who plays Emma, she was someone, she actually comes from that area of Australia, and I felt like there's an authenticity to her that just feels right. Yeah. And an interesting thing with Simon Baker, I mean, I said I generally write for actors, but I wrote the main role of Travis without anyone in mind, really. And Simon had just made a film with my producer, and so we got him the script, and he reacted very, very quickly to the script, and was very, very keen on the character, and kind of used to seeing Simon in the television shows, and he looks quite different in Limbo. So it was important for me to really mold him dramatically from the get-go. When he came onto the film, I went straight into the script, and I just started to give him, basically giving him much more of a stronger physical edge, and then introducing layers within the character from the very beginning. So I just wanted to get Simon to feel very different to his past work, and so he wasn't totally recognizable. And I guess that informed his character a lot, just going from that kind of physical appearance, and that actually led to his kind of mental state as well, being adapted as well.
He really does disappear into the physically disappear into this performance. I thought what he was able to do with, again, this kind of very subtle in way in which he begins to reveal that it does matter to him. In fact, there are points in the film where he's trying to get away from even being a part of this in the film. And then as we see that unfold, he becomes more and more a part of the getting to know the people in the film, the characters in the film.
Yeah, the children play an important role there, because, you know, he's someone who's alienated from his own child, and he sees the young girls, the little girls in the family, and I think they kind of open his heart up a little bit, and I guess does remind him of who this little girl who was abducted many years earlier, you know, could have just been like these girls who he's connecting with in the present moment.
One of the things that struck me about this film and the story is, as it unfolds, it feels very much to me like this would have been a relatively, I was going to say simple, but it would not have been that hard for the police to figure out what happened 20 years ago. Am I wrong to say it that way?
Well, if they had moved early, you know, because, you know, like in my own personal family, there was a very similar situation where our cousin, my mother's cousin, she went missing in this small town, and she was reported missing a couple of days later, and the police didn't act on it. So you don't move quickly. You know, the first 24, 48 hours is always so important when you're solving a case, and, you know, evidence is lost. And basically people forget things, you know, witnesses forget. And I mean, for that personal family case, the police didn't actually go to look for this missing family member. The family actually went looking for her and found her under a bridge on a isolated roadway, just beaten to death, sitting under a bridge. And the family actually are the ones who found her.
Oh my God.
And then that was just kind of the beginning. From that point, the investigation actually was just, there just were not any resources thrown at it.
Oh my God. So again, the reason I brought that into the conversation is because it shines a bright light on just how inequity in this system, in this society, where that is barely considered, and the fact that we're now coming revisiting this crime 20 years later just is another one more strong indication of just this divide, just this racism that we're talking about, that the film really is for I think that's really so much of what the story is about.
And you see with Simon's character, Travis, you know, you see the resources that it's actually thrown at it at this time is this cop who's washed out and kind of probably out there as a punishment, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that they, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give away too much, but in closing our conversation, there's just such so many things to talk about, but the decision to go black and white, the decision, the way you shot it, the format that you shot it on, what were your considerations as you shot it in black and white? And there's a certain, I don't know what the word is, patina to the look of this. It's a black and white film, but you must have done something in the processing of this black. It looks different than other black and white films that I've seen. Does that sound right? What did you do?
I don't know. I just think there's a very strong dynamic range there that helps as well. And I come from a black and white photography background before going into filmmaking, and so I'm very aware of if you're hitting black and white, you've really got to look at your tonal range and make sure you've got the old white to the black and everything in between, and you know the Ansel Adams zone system kind of working for you. And it's just something that felt right for the film. It's like these people are stuck in this limbo. They're kind of stuck in this memory, and the black and white felt like it really suited that. And so it kind of feels like the past or the you know, you're not sure what it is, the present or the future.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost otherworldly. I'm glad you said that in the past, there's something about the way that the film looks as a black and white film that just is a statement in and of itself. And I just love the fact that it looks the way it does.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very important. I mean, I early on when I was writing the script, I went out to the location at Cooperpedia and took a bunch of stills, and I just thought, this feels right for the story. I mean, there's many, you know, you can talk about so many issues, layers, like, you know, the absence of color, it allows no emotional distraction, you know, because it's such a strong color palette out there, and so you concentrate more on actually the characters and the story and the situation that they're in, because you don't have this incredible emotional connection with color.
Well, at the end of the day, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful film to look at. But before we take leave, I want to let people know that the film Limbo will be premiering at the Monica Film Center in Santa Monica on Friday, March 22nd. That's today. In addition to yourself, the lead actor and producer of the film, Simon Baker, will also be there to participate in a Q&A at 7 p.m., along with film critic Carlos Aguilar. Just a wonderful evening to be spent with this wonderful film and Simon Baker, as well as Ivan Sen and Carlos Aguilar. I believe you'll be in town for other screenings over the weekend, so this weekend at the Monica Lemley in Santa Monica. We've been speaking with the director, writer, producer, editor, cinematographer, and composer, Ivan Sen. Ivan, thank you so very much for spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.